The late South African singer Miriam Makeba. During the 1960s, Makeba became the first artist to popularize African music around the world. An outspoken critic of apartheid, Makeba spent 30 years living in exile. I'm Andy Hosh. Join me for this two-hour retrospective on the life and music of Miriam Makeba, Thursday, October 24th, from 2 to 4 p.m., here on KBOO's Africa Oye.
Was that that?
Okay.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 9:01. Coming up next is Political Perspectives with our host, Paul Rowland. We're going to continue our discussion on fracking.
Can you see the sun? Can you feel the wind? Do they tell you anything at all? Or do you care? Or do you care? If the sun should change and the rain should fall, would it matter anything at all? Or do you care? Or do you care? Oh, the circle that we live in is so strong, and the things that you believed in were so wrong. But the changes will take place before too long. There's a way to live, there's a way to die, but you don't have to die this way at all. Do you care? Oh, do you care? There are things to know. There are things to be said. Maybe you should live a different way instead. Oh, do you care? Oh, do you care?
And my name's Paul, and I'm with you this morning on KBOO Political Perspectives. And you just heard the great, late, great Floyd Westerman from his album, The Land Is Your Mother, from back in the 1980s. And as you heard, we are going to be continuing the discussion of gas fracking, now from a front lines perspective. And I do have on the line Pamela from New Brunswick on the far southeastern corner of Canada. Hello, Pamela.
Hi.
Good morning. So I didn't actually, even in the hurry to get this all set up, I didn't actually get your last name.
Oh, my last name is Ross.
Pamela Ross. And so we're going to be talking over the next hour about the events of the past 2 weeks, but more the how it all got started, the kind of sell out, from what I understand, the selling off of many hundreds of thousands of hectares for shale gas exploration in New Brunswick. But we could first, let's start by talking about what's happened recently, because as I read in The Guardian, they had an article called Images of Burning Cars and Narratives About Canadian Natives Breaking the Law Obscure the Real Story About the Mi'kmaq People's Opposition to Shale Gas Exploration. You know, that when these fiery images make the rounds of the social media and the corporate media, it gives this impression of this kind of warfare-like situation that does tend to obscure the reality behind it. And there's like a long history, there's basically been a long build-up to this of many months, if I understand it, of peaceful opposition that ended up in this more direct confrontation recently. So maybe you could just start out by talking about your involvement in this and how events have sort of led up to what's been happening recently.
Yeah, Back in the beginning of June, that's when the actual protests, boots on the ground, people on the road, started. And, you know, people were, you know, large groups of people, a couple hundred, 300 people, were heading out on the road to stop the thumper trucks. The thumper trucks are the trucks that do the, gather the data from the seismic testing, and they do the, put the sonar into the ground, and that's the process. So people went out and started blocking the trucks, and there was, first day there was 12 arrests, and then the next day, the next week, there was like 5 arrests, and then, you know, a week or so later, there was, you know, another dozen arrests, and this has been ongoing all summer. And eventually what happened is people were always on the lookout for the thumper trucks. And eventually what happened is somebody located them in a compound on Highway 134. So, you know, basically a community decision was made, okay, here's the trucks, what are we going to do about it? And so eventually one person decided to, you know, park a van in front of the gates, and that's how the whole blockade on 134 started. Was there was probably about 8 women that stood in front of that van when the police came, and they, you know, called a tow truck. And when the tow truck pulled in, it was a flatbed. The women locked arms and stood in front of the van, between the van and the tow truck, and said, it's okay, you don't have to be here, you can leave. And the tow truck driver, of course, wasn't going to confront the women, so the tow truck left, and everybody cheered. And then, you know, people started gathering from there on up at the compound on Highway 134. About, you know, a few hundred feet down the road from there, there's a dirt road called Hannay Road, H-A-N-N-A-Y, if anybody wants to Google it. And it's Hannay Road, and that is, there's a piece of property there that the First Nations were given permission to camp out on. So that's where the camp actually was created. The lady that gave permission, she's all behind the cause. So there was some people that were actually in the driveway to the compound blocking the gates, and then there was another, you know, large group of people that were just down the road camping, you know, on this private property. So more and more people came, and the police were showed a big presence there at first. What happened was, as per usual, as soon as a protest would appear somewhere, then the RCMP, and this is in rural areas, so the RCMP would create a detour, and they detour the traffic, in some cases, you know, an hour or 2 or 3 hours out of the way so that they wouldn't see the protest. So all of a sudden protesters would say, gee, I haven't seen any traffic in a while, and then we'd realize that we'd been detoured. So the RCMP all summer long had been causing these detours, roadblocks, and then when, you know, your average citizen comes upon it and says, well, what's the problem, officer? And they say, well, there's something going on up the road, we're not sure what it is, but you have to detour. So they were basically trying to, you know, turn the tide on the public so the public would get angry because they were being detoured everywhere. So the protesters have never blocked the road. One of the goals of the protesters is they wanted traffic. We want traffic so people can see, you know, what we have to say and what we're fighting for, which is everybody's water.
Pamela, we're unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, because this is what we're all about as a community radio station. We're in our fundraising drive. We are going to have to take a quick break, and we're going to have to sort of backfill a lot of this story as we go along.
Sure.
To sort of set the stage, get people understanding exactly where it is you're talking about, exactly what the issues are at stake. And I mentioned the burning police cars. We're going to have to talk about when all this happened, which was last Thursday. But before we go to all that, let's talk to Ani, and who else is out there?
Well, right now you got me.
Okay. Hi, Ani.
Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well.
Well, we're doing great here in KABU, in your community radio station, because we are getting your support this morning when you dial 877 877- 500-5266. We have a goal of raising $750 during this program, and we need to do that one member at a time, one listener at a time, deciding that this is your moment to go ahead and take some positive action, take some action that actually benefits your entire community and that works towards social change, because that is part of KBOO's program charter. We are here to promote values of peace, justice, democracy, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change. We are here to promote human rights. These are our values that are written right into our program charter. And if they're values that actually speak to you, that you believe are integral to your moral being, then please go ahead and support this community broadcast. Because, in fact, it is that important that our grassroots community does take care of the funding. That's what keeps us independent. That is what allows us to bring you programming, insightful and inciting programming, like we do every weekday here on the Morning Radio Zine with Kathleen Stevenson as our News and Public Affairs Director. The Morning Radio Zine has been a hallmark of Portland's organizing community and beyond the organizing community into your ears, so that you can get information to live an informed life, so you can take right action, so that we can co-create the world, right? That's part of KBOO's mission. You can be a part of that mission by dialing 877-500-5266. Paul is bringing us such an important program this morning. These are issues that we have not heard about in any kind of depth or detail. We right now are actually able to hear Paul interviewing organizers and people that know what's going on, so we can be a part of solidarity, so that we can, in fact, well, again, live informed lives, right? And really broaden this discussion in the public discourse. Talk about everyone's drinking water being threatened by this. Talk about the international connections. Talk about First Nation issues that are all interconnected with environmental issues, with the exploitations that the fracking industry will do. This is an essential program to our community. And right now it is essential that we receive your support so that we can keep programming like this coming to you day in and day out throughout the year. Go ahead and join us online at kboo.fm, or give us a call right now and say yes. You can sustain us with $5 every month. Say yes at 877-500-5266.
And we're back. And as I said, this is a long story. There's been a long build up to this, and there is some really intense things that happened last Thursday, where some police cars got burned after the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, came in and, you can talk about that, Pamela, and broke up a peaceful demonstration. So maybe we could just talk about that first, because maybe people know more about what happened then, and then we can talk again more about the background of the story.
Well, there was about three things happening all at the same time. Up where the people were actually camping, those people were getting shot at, pepper sprayed, and, you know, chased with dogs. And then you have this vision of the police line. The police line was considerably further down the road, and that line was keeping supporters back. And these supporters were First Nations and non-First Nations. So as that police line was trying to force people to go back, there was people further back towards the village of Rexton. Somebody made an announcement, please put your cameras away, and everybody did, and then the cars were set on fire. Most of First Nations were pretty much either up at the camp getting beat, getting shot, and getting arrested, and the rest of First Nations were mostly the women who were at that police lineup. The majority of the people, nobody really knows exactly who set the cars ablaze, but the majority of the people, attributed it to, you know, angry local people. It's the same thing in Brown's Yard, where, you know, suddenly they came across 9 gigantic trees cut down on the road. The people of Brown's Yard did that, and they're not First Nations. And then Young's Ridge, there was also probably 20 trees cut down, felled onto the road to stop the seismic testers from getting down the road. It took them all day to clear it. And that was also done by locals, angry locals from Rogersville. The government seems to fail to understand that this is not a First Nations issue. This is Francophones, Anglophones, and First Nations, and everybody's united like nobody's ever seen. This is absolutely historical. There's the government's tried to divide and conquer. They've tried to, you know, convince non-natives that, you know, the natives are going to sell you out. And they're trying to convince natives that the non-natives are just using them. And it's not working. It's not working at all.
So, yeah, I think we should talk more about that. That seems to be a really one of the most interesting and inspiring to me, anyway, aspects of this, the unity that's being shown. But this term First Nations may not be totally familiar with our listeners. I guess it's sort of used interchangeably with Native people, Aboriginal people. It's basically, you know, the original indigenous inhabitants from that area. Who are, maybe you could describe who they are?
Well, yes, there's where we are in New Brunswick is an area called Sigmatug, and it's Wabanaki territory. So it's made up of the Maliseet and Mi'kmaq, and let's see, Maliseet, Mi'kmaq, and the people from Elsipuktuk, and all the way down to Passamaquoddy, down into Nova Scotia. It's a huge area.
The Passamaquoddy are also found in Maine, right?
Yes, Wabanaki territory includes part of Maine. So,
and you're quite close to Maine, actually, to give people a sense. You're, what, a few hours from the border of Maine?
New Brunswick actually borders along Maine. There's Calais, Maine, and St. Stephen, New Brunswick. And there's also Holton, Maine. And that's in northwestern New Brunswick. It kind of passes through into around the Edmundston area. We border along with Maine, and there's a lot of the First Nations families extend, you know, into the United States, into New England. So they come and go on a regular basis. So this whole territory is unceded ground. The Mi'kmaq have never given up the right to their land. The treaty that exists for this area is a peace and friendship treaty. They agreed to share the land with us, not give it to us. So, you know, my background, I'm Scottish. So it's this is something that people need to really understand. It's unceded territory, and people need to respect that. And that's why the battle's on.
And that's something that people up here are familiar, because also the parts of Canada that are north of us also have that unceded territory, and that's a big issue in some of the fights over some of the pipelines, the tar sands pipelines that have are scheduled or being built through their territories, and there's also a lot of resistance against that. And I'd like to just say, before we go to another fundraising break in a second here, Mi'kmaq, as you pronounce it, I just want to say, if people are interested in looking that up, it's generally spelled M-I-apostrophe-K-M-A-Q. So your pronunciation, obviously, is probably more faithful than maybe people would. I always pronounce it Mi'kmaq, which is like the way it looks. But
You can do Mi'kmaq, M-I-C-M-A-C, and uh-huh. You'll find lots on the internet. And you can do Mi'kmaq, which is M-I-G-M-A-W, or you can do it the way you spelled it.
Okay.
They can also do Wabanaki, is W-A-B-A-N-A-K-I.
Okay, well, that's helpful. And after the fundraising appeal, we're going to come back and talk more about what's going on out there in New Brunswick.
You are listening to this important conversation brought to you by Paul Rowland this morning here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. You are listening right now, and that is a great reason for you to support this information with some of your hard-earned money. We do appreciate that you work hard for your money, and we think that we work hard to gain your support. We have volunteers coming in to produce dynamite programming, just like you're hearing this morning, digging deep into issues that you have perhaps not heard about at all, or have only heard about in a very cursory way that does not do justice to the background information that is so important. It's so vital to this story this morning. Please support the effort to get good analysis, good information, good ideas circulating in the community that is essential and essentially a part of KBOO. And it's why we exist. And right now, in order to continue our existence, we are asking for your support. You're our grassroots. You are what keeps us independent. You are what allows this information to flow to you through your ears this morning. 877-500-5266 is the number to dial. You can join us in a sustainable method, just $5 a month or $10 a month. Some people are able to give us a dollar a day or $30 a month. Please consider joining at a level that works for you. We want your participation. That is the thing that's important to us, is that you are actually not just being a passive consumer of media, a passive listener, but you are actively participating, that you are coming in not only with your ears and your mind, but actually backing us with some financial resources and becoming a very integral part of the station. Do pick up the phone right now and dial 877-500-5266 and say yes to the Radio Zine and yes to your entire community. Your call supports so many people who are not able, perhaps, at this moment to make a contribution themselves. If you are, then please know that you are doing it not only for yourself, but for your entire community, because KBOO's programming is essential. I know it for a fact myself. I've been listening since I was a preteen here in this area, because KBOO was a connection. It was a lifeline of schools of thought that I really hungered for, and ideas and cultural information that were not present anywhere else. And this is still true today. Please, friends, right now, take a moment out of your day to do some action that is going to feel good. It is there. It's positive. It's a good step to take to enrich your community right now by supporting your community radio station. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. You can also donate online at kboo.fm. I want to thank Ryan for doing just that. Ryan called 877-500-5266 and renewed his membership, increasing the monthly contribution that Ryan has been giving for a while to actually increase that a little bit more, knowing that he can afford just a little bit more to support community radio. Perhaps you've been giving in a monthly way for the last year, 2 years, 10 years. Well, maybe you can take that up. Just maybe a dollar a month more. If you've been giving $5 a month, try giving $6 or $7 a month. If you've been giving $10 a month, try giving $12 or $13 a month. See what you can do, again, to bring your support to KBOO Community Radio as we are in the last days of this fall membership drive, reaching $125,000 by Saturday with your support. Right now, we're a little bit from that, and we need to hear from you. 877-500-5266. Online, you can join us at kboo.fm. With your contribution of $60 or more this morning, if you'd like to make that contribution all at one time, put it on a credit card, we would love to give you a pair of tickets to see KPFA on the air. It's a documentary screening on November 3rd at the Hollywood Theater. It will also have a panel discussion after the film discussing the history of community radio, the importance of independent media, the history of KPFA in particular, the very first community radio station started by Lewis Hill, a conscientious objector in World War II. You can hear that whole story and its trials and tribulations over the years. And you can also support KBOO all at the same time. It's a pair of tickets to see that screening at the Hollywood on November 3rd and your membership to KBOO Community Radio all at the same time. What a deal. 877-500-5266. Celebrate community radio. You know, it's an exciting medium, and it's here to be celebrated, and it's here to be participated in. It is, in fact, here for you. You are the community that we serve. We don't have to serve our corporate masters. We don't have huge lumps of sum given to us by some corporate foundation that will then keep us on a string about what kind of information is appropriate for the airwaves. No, we have volunteers coming in doing this as a labor of love. They do it because they are passionate about these issues. They are passionate about sharing this information with the rest of the community so that we can broaden public discourse. That is essential to KBOO's mission, and you are the grassroots that keep it possible. Give us a call right now at 877-500-5266 and become a member or renew your membership to KBOO today.
And we're back. And thank you for that, Ani. And I also would encourage you to support KABU for this kind of programming, the ability to call and find out what's going on in far-flung reaches of this great Turtle Island, North American continent. Pamela, are you still there?
I am.
Hi. So this is really, really fascinating history. I mean, these issues are similar everywhere in the Pacific Northwest. We have issues of coal trains passing through the proposed to pass through the Columbia River, also oil trains carrying tar sands from the Dakotas and elsewhere, and possibly also from Alberta. And some of the affiliated tribes of the Northwest and the Columbia Intertribal Fish Commission have come out against that because they pass through tribal territories. The Nez Perce a couple months ago blockaded some equipment going up to the tar sands in Alberta, and is really the first time that I know of that the young people of the Nez Perce were out there involved in civil disobedience. And as I was reading in some articles about this, it seems similar to what's going on there. There's a renewed sense of purpose and a kind of cultural resurgence going on, which often takes place when people are being threatened by outside forces. Do you see that happening?
Absolutely, and not just feeling threatened by outside forces. I mean, this is a fight for their lives. I mean, the First Nations here in Canada, the UN just did a report, a scathing report, in regards to the situation for most First Nations communities in Canada. And in many cases, they have nothing left to lose. They've taken First Nations and who are all across the land, and then created this reservation system, and put all the First Nations people onto reserves, and then created this band system where there's like 600 chiefs across the whole country, and then when it comes time to negotiation, they say, well, there's 600 chiefs, there's too many, you can't negotiate with everyone. And this is the system, that the government or the colonialists created in the first place. So you better consider you're going to have to deal with them sooner or later. So here in New Brunswick, it's quite unique because we have the Acadian people, and I don't know if you know much about the Acadians' history.
No, you mentioned the term Francophone, which I guess is a sort of an equivalent term earlier.
They're French, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's not just French. They're Acadian, the Acadian people, and the Acadian people were run out of here, and headed down towards Louisiana, and it was First Nations. It was the Mi'kmaq people that went down into the United States and brought them back. So there's solidarity. The Acadians also have a treaty. So there's solidarity between First Nations and Acadians for hundreds of years. As of late, like 43 years ago, we have Kuchibukwak National Park, which is on the eastern shore, kind of like halfway up the coast of New Brunswick. It's a beautiful park. People used to live there, and about 43 years ago, the government expropriated that land from the Acadians. There was one guy who held out. He's passed away now, but he refused to move, and they built the park around him. So that was only 43 years ago. They expropriated all that land to create Kuchibukwak National Park. And now they're talking about seismic testing in Kuchibukwak National Park. And they're saying it's bad enough you expropriated it from us in the first place, and now you think you're going to frack it? Like, you got to be out of your mind.
So that issue of... I'm glad you mentioned that, because the issue right now is over the seismic testing, which is basically the first step towards the preliminary step towards shale gas exploration.
Yes. What it is, it's basically kind of like a sonar or X-ray, if you will, down into the ground to get an idea of what the shale layers look like, how deep they are, how thick they are, and where they are. And it's basically... testing, because we know, like, New Brunswick is basically, you start to dig a hole, it's not going to take very long, you're going to hit shale. Shale's everywhere. Basically, this seismic testing is going to tell them where the best places are. So the government says this is the first step in the process, and we said yes, but we don't, you know, we say no to the whole process. So we don't care if it's just seismic testing. We know that once you're finished seismic testing, then you're going to go to the next, you know, step in the process. The government right now, their position is they feel they've part of, I think it was Section 35 of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms says that First Nations have to be consulted, and the government needs First Nations consent. Right now, the government is insinuating that it has consulted First Nations, but First Nations' stance is, yes, you may think you have consulted us, but that does not mean you have consent. So that's a sticking point right now, because the government, you know, is still hell-bent on going through with this. And the people are not having any part of it whatsoever.
So if that's the territory is unceded, what is the actual legal status of the people in terms of consultation?
In terms of consultation, what the government did is went up to Elsa Poktuk and invited a select few elders to a meeting and told them that they'd be paid to go. First, they were told they'd be paid $200 to attend this information session. They actually only got paid $100 each, but they were never, ever told that if you attend this meeting and you accept this money, then that is equivalent to consultation.
That is extremely devious.
Oh, extremely devious. I mean, and that's the other problem that everybody has with the government. So the government is standing firm on that. They're saying, nope, we consulted you. We had the meetings. We paid the people. It's all said and done. And they're saying no. People are saying no, that's just not the way it is. So so that's a real big sticking point right now. And the elders that attended that meeting, they feel horrible because they had no idea. You know, they had no idea what was going to ensue after this. So, you know, people are coming here from all over the country. In the United States, there's people coming up from Maine, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, Ontario, Quebec.
It's become a real flashpoint.
Oh, yeah. More and more people are coming. And right now, we're having, there's six people remain in jail out of the 40 that were arrested. And of those six people, the, this is day two of the bail hearing for the first warrior, and his name is Cody Stevens. He showed up in the prisoner's box yesterday for his bail hearing, and, you know, they didn't get through it yesterday. They didn't get finished this morning. Court is on recess right now for lunch, and he's going back in the prisoner box this afternoon. So there was supposed to be yesterday, three warriors were supposed to appear for a bail hearing yesterday, and they started Cody Stevens, and they still haven't got through that, and this is day two. So this is, you know, this is, by the looks of things, it's going to take at least all week, probably into next week.
So again,
meanwhile, these warriors are still in jail.
So again, those 40 arrested, that all goes back to last Thursday?
Yes.
Yeah, that was when the big confrontation, or the big, however you want to call it, the incursion of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police into what, by all accounts, from what I understand, from your account, was a peaceful protest.
Absolutely. The RCMP rolled in the wee hours of the morning. A lot of people were sleeping. The firekeeper was up. They rolled in with dogs. They you know, crawled on their bellies across the grass. You know, none of that was necessary, but, you know, they could have walked up and spoken to the people easily, and but they decided not to do it that way. They decided to, you know, do it the hard way. People were negotiating the whole way through, you know, with the RCMP trying to say, listen, you know, you don't need to do this, and you know, they just basically didn't listen at all. It's almost like it was an exercise for them of, you know, practice of how to take out, you know, a protest movement. So Unfortunately, or fortunately, I mean, all that did is give us more strength. It gave us even more unity. It's given us more people to support us. We're doing a fundraiser right now for the Warriors. In the last 3 days, we've raised like $10,000 toward their legal fees.
Speaking of fundraising, in a few minutes, we are going to have to go back to another fundraising break. Before we do this, the whole issue of unity, now, what were relationships like, you know, before that? Were people just sort of in their own spheres? You talk about the French Acadians. You talk about what are called the Anglophones, which is your heritage, which you're particularly of Scottish heritage, and other people are of English and other, I'm sure. But what were the relationships like? Did people forge this unity kind of out of nothing, or were there already, you know, did people already have social relationships across ethnic, racial lines?
I think there was a certain amount of relationships across ethnic, racial lines, but for the most part, I'd say that, you know, the English, you know, that would be English, Scottish, anybody who speaks English for the mother tongue, kind of, you know, did their own thing, and the Acadians, oh, they're having another festival, and once in a while you'd go to the festival just, you know, to experience the Acadian culture or whatever. But for the most part, I think all the, you know, all Acadians, English and First Nations pretty much kind of kept to themselves. And this movement has just brought everybody together, because we all agree, you know, we're all nothing without water. So you know, this has really brought us, the water has brought us together. We all have the same issue. We all have, and we may not agree on how to get there, and we may have some disagreements along the way, but we always come back to the bottom line is we're all fighting for the water. And it just brings us back stronger.
But so I was going to have another guest from a co-op radio station in Edmonton. He wasn't able to do it. He called this morning, but he had, you know, he had mentioned that there is some support for fracking. However, it's not perhaps obviously a complete opposition to fracking. Who are some of the interests that are trying to bring fracking to the New Brunswick?
Well, there's a certain amount of the people. Of the population, because we've had a huge amount of people leave New Brunswick and head out west to work in the tar sands, and some of them are working, you know, on fracking sites or fracking wells. So, you know, I think over this past summer we've probably lost at least 2,000-3,000 people. Our population here is in the decline, and it has been for some time. The majority of our people here are senior citizens. Young people are not sticking around because there's really nothing the province has to offer them. So a lot of people have this idea that, you know, if we allow fracking and pipelines for that matter, then a lot of their loved ones that are working out west can come back home and they'll, you know, they'll be here and they don't have to go away to work and they won't have to miss their families and miss their kids. But a lot of people here are also, you know, they don't really understand what a well pad is. Like it's not like you're going to get a job on a well pad and you're going to work there for the next 20 or 30 years. These are migrant jobs. I mean, they have crews that go from well pad to well pad to well pad. They're suggesting that there's 21 jobs per well pad, and then the government says, and look, we're going to have 30 well pads. Well, okay, 20 jobs, 30 well pads. That's 600 jobs, you would think.
Okay.
And that's what people are doing, and that's just not true. It's 20 jobs to service 30 well pads.
It sounds like an extremely difficult bind, and part of this was discussed earlier on the talk radio when they were talking about that the gas just doesn't even last either. It's not, you know, these aren't jobs that are going to, as you say, going to last thing. They get all the gas out and then they move on to the next one. But we are going to move to another fundraising appeal. Ani, are you there?
I sure am, Paul. Thank you so much for being here with us this morning. And I want to thank all of our listeners for listening this morning, because you're getting this information. And this is important to spread around the communities to actually give people a different perspective than you might hear from mainstream press, if you've heard anything at all from the mainstream press, because actually this is one of those issues that by and large has been roundly ignored. And that is, again, not a service to the community. In fact, it's a service to the corporate masters, right? We're not like that. We're a little different here at KABU. And the reason that we can be a little bit different here at KABU is because you are our grassroots that keep us supported. Right now, we need your support at 877-500-5266. You can call on in, and with your monthly donation, contribution of $5 a month, $7 a month, what you can budget into your finances every month, you know that you can support your entire community quickly, silently, painlessly. It will just happen automatically once you make the call to 877-500-5266 and let us know that you're there and that you'd like to start an electronic funds transfer so that we can make sure that your support's coming in all year round, and we can make sure we can continue to bring you programs that are relevant, that are informative, that are insightful, just like Paul Roland does here on KABU's Radio Zine so often, and certainly as he's doing this morning, talking about solidarity issues in Canada with the fracking, with First Nations issues, with sovereign people's rights. This is important information, and it's a perspective that you don't get elsewhere. Please do call right now with your support. We need to raise $750 this morning during this hour, and we can only do it with your help. But it's so easy to do once you make that call.
We need your solidarity now.
Absolutely. It's solidarity action that works, and collective action gets the goods. 877-500-5266. Online at KBOO.FM. I do want to thank some restaurants who have contributed this morning and throughout today to feed the volunteers that are coming in fact, help us raise the funds and attain your membership. I want to thank Grendel's Cafe at 729 East Burnside. I want to thank Montage at 301 Southeast Morrison Street. And I want to thank Yenha at 6820 Northeast Sandy Boulevard. We thank these restaurants, and we would love to thank you when you give us a call at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
Yeah, I would second that. You know, we've been going at this a week and a half with this fundraising drive, and we're coming down to Saturday, our last day, and we really would like to reach our goal. This is really important. This is the way we keep the station going. So I would also like to encourage you to call that number, 877-500-5266. Let's get this day of fundraising off to a good start. And with that, I'd like to go back to Pamela and from New Brunswick. This has been a really fascinating glimpse into completely the opposite side of the continent from where we are. But the issues are very similar because the same extractive forces are at work all across the continent. We see that more and more. It's become kind of mind-boggling. I saw this. I went to at the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference. A Native man from, I believe it was from Alberta, I'm not sure, put up a map of all the because fracking's going in there too, between fracking, oil sands, regular oil, this map and the entire, and pipelines, just the entire western provinces of Canada that he had were just the spider webs and dots everywhere. It's truly frightening and daunting to me, but it's really inspiring to see people in communities understand what's at stake. And, you know, like you were talking before the break, it's a terrible bind to be in where, you know, you have high unemployment. The journalist I was talking to that was going to be on was talking about the really high level of unemployment. So people are going for these really difficult solutions to try to resolve these economic problems. And they're very short-term solutions. And so my heart goes out to you and, you know, and people in rural areas and other areas all across the country or all across the world, really, because I saw in Romania there was a action in the last week against fracking. In Great Britain, there's been actions against fracking. And in North Africa, this thing is spreading all over the world as well.
Absolutely, and I'd like to encourage your listeners to call in and donate money to your station, too, to keep you guys on the air. We have a particularly interesting problem in New Brunswick in terms of newspapers. Every newspaper in New Brunswick, except for one French publication, belongs to the same family, and that's Irving Oil. So you know what we're up against. So when anything that's published in the paper is definitely against First Nations, against the protesters, Irving Oil is the Irving family. They're the ones that stand to make the most money from this, besides SWN, that's the Texas-based company that is here in New Brunswick, in Kent County in particular. Now, there's more companies than just Southwest out of Texas, but they're the ones that are actually doing the seismic testing right now. Another interesting note is SWN has said they've met resistance, you know, for drilling before, but this is the first time ever that they've met this much resistance, and they're only in the seismic testing stage. They're being pretty mum right now. They're not saying anything. They won't say anything to the newspapers. They won't say anything to media, television. But that's another thing we're fighting here is the print media is all run by the same family, and it's really hard to get any kind of a different view across. It's news according to Irving. Irving has also moved into Maine in a big, big way. Irving gas stations are everywhere, or they call them Circle K's for K.C. Irving. And it's just totally obscene. And in the forest of New Brunswick, the government of New Brunswick, I believe it was back in 1982, basically signed over all the Crown land management of the forest to the Irving Company. So Irving manages the forest. Irving is the pulp and paper mill. They own all of them. They put pretty much everybody out of business. Irving produces the paper that's used in and the tissue and toilet paper, and that's what all our trees that they're replanting now is just for pulp and toilet paper and paper towel.
So is Irving Canadian-based? Are they Canadian-based?
The family is initially from, they're from New Brunswick. The family is from New Brunswick. And they're one of the top five largest companies in Canada. There's Irving Oil, and then there's Irving. So there's the brothers. The brothers run the, it's a private family business. There's two brothers that run it, J.K. and J.D. Irving. And when that company was handed down, it was handed down to them, and one of the conditions was that they don't live in Canada. So I believe they're living down in, I don't know if it's the Bahamas or Barbados, one of the two.
Tough life.
They don't live here.
So we're going to have to go back for our last fundraising appeal for this hour. It's been wonderful talking to you. We're going to come back, and I'd like you just think about during the break what you'd like sort of to wrap up with, to leave our listeners with. And we are talking, I am talking to, I'm sorry, what was your last name again?
Ross.
Pamela Ross. And you're in Moncton, is that right?
I am.
You're in Moncton, and your Facebook page that I was able to get a hold of you is called Moncton Anti-Fracking?
It is.
So people can go to Moncton Anti-Fracking, and we'll also ask you for any other resources online or otherwise that people can get when we come back.
Right now we're covering the court proceedings.
Okay, great. And so we're going to go back out. We're going out to Justin now. Hi, Justin.
Hi, Paul. What a pleasure to be here with you and to join Ani and ask all the listeners out there to think of where else they're going to go to get information like this. Go down to Fox News or MSNBC and see how much coverage is going on. Then, after they've laughed you out of the lobby, why don't you come down here to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Get involved in your community radio station. station, dear listener, or maybe it's as simple as picking up your phone and making a small donation to the entire community by calling toll-free 877-500-5266. That's a toll-free number from anywhere in North America, 877-500-KBOO. By now, dear listeners, you realize we are in our fall membership drive, and you realize that it is through your support that this community radio station continues to serve the entire community and the entire world. By this time, you realize it doesn't have to break your bank to make a donation, and by this time, you realize we have many thank you gifts to create incentive for you to make that call. So there's really one thing left to do. Make the call. 877-500-5266. Of course, you can always do that online at kboo.fm.
It is so important that we do hear from you now, because in fact, it is only with your participation that KBOO continues our independence. You are the grassroots support supporting this grassroots community radio station.
Easy for you to say.
Well, yes, it is, actually, because it's something that I've been working with for about 25 years now, this idea of symbiotic community relationship building, that you, the community, are the reason the community radio station exists, so that we can, in fact, be in service to you. You provide us with volunteers who create the programs that the communities need, and we, the infrastructure of the radio station, provides with training so that these volunteers from the community can in fact express themselves, give information and analysis to inform all of us, so that we can take action together to make social change work. Now we ask the community to fill in that last part and fund us so that we can continue this independent radio grand experiment for 45 years and going strong. 877-500-5266 is that number to call. Online, you can join us at kboo.fm.
There are thousands of you listening, and we'd like to get $750 before 10 o'clock. That's about 8 minutes. But you know what? If seven of you could start that sustaining membership, which would be a modest $10 a month, that's 33 cents a day towards the more than $2,000 it costs to service your community radio station. So there is a timing element here. You've waited a long time. Indeed, most of you have been listening for years and years and years. And maybe you were waiting for that time to become a hero. Well, 8 minutes to go and several hundred dollars to do it. So why don't you get on the phone, 877-500-5266. We've stripped most of the cost out of this operation that we can. Steve in the board, on the board there, he's doing it for free. Paul, who's doing this interview, he's doing it for free. We produce just about all of our own programming, so we're not spending any money there. In fact, we're even trading with the hotel next door to take care of our damn garbage. We're not a top-heavy organization. And yet, $750 is what is needed for this period right now. 877-500-5266. If you're waiting for someone else to do it, I think that time has passed and we've moved into a new time, and that's the time where you do it yourself. 877-500-5266. Let's call this a DIY fundraising endeavor. You do it. I'm not talking to the person in the car behind you or the person who lives across the street or the person in the cubicle down the hall. I'm talking to you, dear listener. You've waited a long time, although you joined with your mind and with your heart and with your ears. Years and years ago. Now it's that little matter of the bill. 877-500-KBOO.
And it is only with our community members picking up the bill that this independent radio station remains independent. That is what allows us to be so. It is what allows us to create insightful programming, deep analysis, and, well, I gotta say, all the inspiring music and cultural programs that we bring you throughout the day, day in and day out, throughout the year. All of these things come to you and your ears via your own financial support. It is a really cool thing about KBOO. 83% of our money comes directly from you, our listener. That means that we are beholden to no one person or no one corporation, no one giant foundation. We are, in fact, beholden to you, our grassroots community. It keeps us, well, I gotta say, keeps us relevant. 877-500-5266. Consider contributing just on a monthly basis, sustaining us throughout the year. $10 a month, $30 a month, $1 a day for KBOO. Can you be a KBOO hero this morning and give us just $1 every day, $30 a month is an easy way to do it for many people listening right now. Make this the moment that you make that commitment to your community to sustain us throughout the year. 877-500-5266 or online, kboo.fm.
That's how it gets done, by you, dear listener, doing it, not waiting for someone else. There's so much disempowering media. How about being a part of the empowering media, the one that's giving it to you as we see it and letting you sort it out, rather than simply turning you into a consumer and a commodity? The question is, if you don't do it, why would someone else do it? It's here for everyone, and let everyone be a part of it. 877-500-KBOO.
And thank you, Justin and Ani. And I agree. I am part of that, and we're all part of it here, and we're all in it together. You're part of it, too, if you're listening to this. And Pamela Ross is also part of it now, from all the way across the continent, from Moncton in New Brunswick, Canada, the lower southeast corner, just above Maine. I would, in the couple minutes we have left, I would just like to, you know, these things, you know, people, maybe they've seen Gasland, they've heard about these issues, and it does seem very daunting and kind of overwhelming, but it does seem like there's something different happening there. It does seem like, as you said, it's only at the seismic testing phase. Maybe this is part of something different happening.
Well, I think the government thought it would be easier to swallow if they said, oh, don't worry, we're just seismic testing. We'd like to see what's underneath the earth. This is good not just for shale gas exploration, but this is just good geologically. They created an energy institute, and they put who we thought was a PhD, Louis Laprière, in charge of the energy institute. Well, people went digging into his credentials, and it turns out that he said he had a PhD from the University of Maine, but he doesn't. And then he said, oh, but it's from the University of Minnesota, and it isn't. And then we finally dug up his actual credentials, and he has a university degree back from 1985, I believe it was issued, and it's a degree of education, and it was from the University of Walden, which I believe it's an online university now, but back in 1985 it would have been correspondence. So that's the expert that they were going with, and he's already been discredited, fired. He's resigned from his position at the University of Moncton. He's resigned from all the boards that he was on. They're questioning. He was one of the advisors as a PhD on the Confederation Bridge that goes from Prince Edward Island over to New Brunswick. He gave the go-ahead for that, saying it wouldn't bother any of the marine life or the bottom of the Northumberland Strait. Now they're looking into that because, you know, he was instrumental also in mining in northern Ontario, where, you know, Mr. Lapierre's study said, oh, no, there'll be no adverse effects on the wildlife or on First Nations. So this guy's really dicey, and the government's still, you know, holding tight onto his report, saying, well, even though he's been discredited, you know, his report's still good. You know, it's still good information. And we're saying, no, it's flawed information because he didn't even have the credentials in the first place. Well, Dr. Cleary did a report. She's the medical officer for the province. And she did a report saying that the impact on health and just society in general for the increase in crime, the increase in drug, family violence, all that kind of stuff that comes with the boom-bust economy wasn't worth it. And they raked her over the coals, they drug her through the mud and tried to discredit everything she said, and she's since gone on to win an award for the article that she wrote.
Pamela, we're going to have to leave it there. I really appreciate your being with us this morning.
There's so much information in so little time.
I know. Isn't that always the case? Well, yeah. Pamela Ross from Moncton Anti-Fracking, I'll link that on this program on the KBOO website. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Paul Rowland with Political Perspectives.
Thank you. And our river will run
same blood.
Mis hermanos,
mis hermanas,
my sisters,
somos un solo río.
We are one river.
Mis hermanos,
mis hermanos,
my brothers,
la tierra es tu madre.
The land is your mother.
Mis hermanas,
mis hermanas,
my sisters,
somos todos hijos de ella.
We are all her children.
Cuida tu madre.
Take care of your mother.
Con todo cariño.
With all the strength in your heart.
Somos un solo río.
We are one river.
Y nuestro río.
KBFA brings the listening public the other point of view.
There was a strong sense that this was the beginning of something that would spread across the country.
On Sunday, November 3rd, at the historic Hollywood Theater, KBOO presents an exclusive benefit screening of the film KPFA On the Air.
This documentary tells the powerful story of the beginnings of listener-sponsored radio in the United States with the birth of Pacifica in Berkeley in 1949.
KPFA On the Air chronicles the origins of the free speech movement, the first stirrings of the student movements at Berkeley, and opposition to the Vietnam War in the early 1960s.
Eventually spawning a network of free-form, independent radio stations across the country, including KBOO, which came on the air in 1968. So come join us at the Hollywood Theater, Northeast 41st and Sandy Boulevard, Sunday, November 3rd, at 7 in the evening.
Help keep community radio strong and thriving into the future.
KPFA Bridge.
Human rights advocates from around the world have converged on Louisiana this week to honor Herman Wallace, Angola 3 member released just days before his death, October 4th. They're not only there to celebrate the victory of having his conviction overturned or to mourn his passing. They're in Louisiana to demand the state end its campaign of vengeance against remaining Angola 3 member Albert Woodfox. Tune in to a deeper look this Thursday morning, October 24th. My guest is released Angola 3 member Robert Hillary King. You'll have the opportunity to seize the moment and